Chapter 11. The world had grown 6 years older since that night of the return. It was a warm autumn afternoon, and there had been heavy rain. The sun burst suddenly from among the clouds, and the old battleground, sparkling brilliantly and cheerfully at sight of it in one green place, flashed a responsive welcome there, which spread along the countryside, as if a joyful beacon had been lighted up, and answered from a thousand stations. How beautiful the landscape kindling in the light, and that luxuriant influence passing on like a celestial presence, brightening everything. The wood, a somber mass before, revealed its varied tints of yellow, green, brown, red. Its different forms of trees, with raindrops glittering on their leaves and twinkling as they fell. The verdant meadow land, bright and glowing, seemed as if it had been blind, a minute since, and now had found a sense of sight, wherewith to look up at the shining sky. Cornfields, hedgerows, fences, homesteads, and clustered roofs, the steeple of the church, the stream, the water mill, all sprang out of the gloomy darkness smiling. Birds sang sweetly, flowers raised their drooping heads, fresh scents arose from the invigorated ground. The blue expanse above extended and diffused itself. Already the sun's slanting rays pierced mortally the sullen bank of cloud that lingered in its flight, and a rainbow, spirit of all the colors that adorned the earth and sky, spanned the whole arch with its triumphant glory. At such a time, one little roadside inn, snugly sheltered behind a great elm tree with a rare seat for idlers encircling its capacious bole, addressed a cheerful front towards the traveler, as a house of entertainment ought, and tempted him with many mute, but significant assurances of a comfortable welcome. The ruddy signboard perched up in the tree, with its golden letters winking in the sun, ogled the passerby, from among the green leaves, like a jolly face, and promised good cheer. The horse trough, full of clear fresh water, and the ground below it sprinkled with droppings of fragrant hay, made every horse that passed prick up his ears. The crimson curtains in the lower rooms, and the pure white hangings in the little bedchambers above, beckoned. Come in. With every breath of air. Upon the bright green shutters, there were golden legends about beer and ale, and neat wines, and good beds, and an affecting picture of a brown jug frothing over at the top. Upon the windowsills were flowering plants in bright red pots, which made a lively show against the white front of the house. And in the darkness of the doorway there were streaks of light, which glanced off from the surfaces of bottles and tankards. On the doorstep, appeared a proper figure of a landlord too, for, though he was a short man, he was round and broad, and stood with his hands in his pockets, and his legs just wide enough apart to express a mind at rest upon the subject of the cellar, and an easy confidence too calm, and virtuous to become a swagger in the general resources of the inn. The superabundant moisture, trickling from everything after the late rain, set him off well. Nothing near him was thirsty. Certain top-heavy dahlias, looking over the palings of his neat well-ordered garden, had swilled as much as they could carry, perhaps a trifle more, and may have been the worse for liquor. But the sweet briar, roses, wallflowers, the plants at the windows, and the leaves on the old tree, were in the beaming state of moderate company, that had taken no more than was wholesome for them, and had served to develop their best qualities. Sprinkling dewy drops about them on the ground, they seemed profuse of innocent and sparkling mirth, that did good where it lighted, softening neglected corners which the steady rain could seldom reach, and hurting nothing. This village inn had assumed, on being established, an uncommon sign. It was called the Nutmeg Grater. And underneath that household word, was inscribed, up in the tree, on the same flaming board, and in the light golden characters, by Benjamin Britten. At a second glance, and on a more minute examination of his face, you might have known that it was no other than Benjamin Britten himself who stood in the doorway, reasonably changed by time, but for the better, a very comfortable host indeed. Apostrophe Mrs. B. Apostrophe said Mr. Britten, looking down the road, is rather late. It's tea time. apostrophe, as there was no Mrs. Britton coming, he strolled leisurely out into the road, and looked up at the house, very much to his satisfaction. It's just the sort of house, apostrophe, said Benjamin, I should wish to stop at, if I didn't keep it. Apostrophe, then, he strolled towards the garden paling, and took a look at the dahlias. They looked over at him, with a helpless drowsy hanging of their heads, which bobbed again, as the heavy drops of wet dripped off them. You must be looked after, apostrophe, said Benjamin. Memorandum, not to forget to tell her so. She's a long time coming. Apostrophe, Mr. Britton's better half seemed to be by so very much his better half, that his own moiety of himself was utterly cast away, and helpless without her. She hadn't much to do, I think, apostrophe, said Ben. There were a few little matters of business after market, but not many. Oh, here we are at last. Apostrophe, apostrophe, a chaise cart, driven by a boy, came clattering along the road, and seated in it, in a chair, with a large well-saturated umbrella spread out to dry behind her, was the plump figure of a matronly woman, with her bare arms folded across a basket which she carried on her knee, several other baskets and parcels lying crowded around her, and a certain bright good nature in her face, and contented awkwardness in her manner, as she jogged to and fro with the motion of her carriage, which smacked of old times, even in the distance. Upon her nearer approach, this relish of bygone days was not diminished, and when the cart stopped at the nutmeg grater door, a pair of shoes, alighting from it, slipped nimbly through Mr. Britton's open arms, and came down with a substantial weight upon the pathway, which shoes could hardly have belonged to anyone but Clemency Newcome. In fact, they did belong to her, and she stood in them, and a rosy, comfortable-looking soul she was, with as much soap on her glossy face as in times of yore, but with whole elbows now, that had grown quite dimpled in her improved condition. You're late, Clemmy. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Britton. Why, you see, Ben, I've had a deal to do. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she replied, looking busily after the safe removal into the house of all the packages and baskets. 8, 9, 10, where's 11? Oh. My basket's 11. It's all right. Put the horse up, Harry, and if he coughs again give him a warm mash tonight. 8, 9, 10. Why, where's 11? Oh. Forgot, it's all right. How's the children, Ben? Apostrophe, apostrophe, hearty, Clemmy, hearty. Apostrophe, bless their precious faces. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Britton, unbonneting her own round countenance, for she and her husband were by this time in the bar, and smoothing her hair with her open hands. Give us a kiss, old man. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Britton promptly complied. I think, apostrophe, said Mrs. Britton, applying herself to her pockets and drawing forth an immense bulk of thin books and crumpled papers. A very kennel of dog's ears. I've done everything. Bills all settled, turnips sold, brewer's account looked into, and paid tobacco pipes ordered £17.4, paid into the bank Dr. Heathfield's charge for little Clemmy. Well, guess what that is, Dr. Heathfield won't take nothing again, Ben. Apostrophe, I thought he wouldn't, apostrophe, returned Ben. No. He says whatever family you was to have, Ben, he'd never put you to the cost of a halfpenny. Not if you was to have 20. Apostrophe, Mr. Britton's face assumed a serious expression, and he looked hard at the wall. And it kind of him? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Clemency. Very, apostrophe, returned Mr. Britton. It's the sort of kindness that I wouldn't presume upon, on any account. Apostrophe, no, apostrophe, retorted Clemency. Of course not. Then there's the pony he fetched £8.2, and that ain't bad, is it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, it's very good, apostrophe, said Ben. I'm glad you're pleased. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed his wife. I thought you would be, and I think that's all, and so no more at present from yours and setter, C. Britton. Ha ha ha. There. Take all the papers, and lock 'em up. Oh, wait a minute. Here's a printed bill to stick on the wall. Wet from the printers. How nice it smells. Apostrophe apostrophe, what's this? Apostrophe apostrophe, said Ben, looking over the document. I don't know, apostrophe, replied his wife. I haven't read a word of it. Apostrophe, to be sold by auction, apostrophe, read the host of the nutmeg grater, unless previously disposed of by private contract. Apostrophe, they always put that, apostrophe, said Clemency. Yes, but they don't always put this, apostrophe, he returned. Look here, mansion, and see offices, and see shrubberies, and see ring fence, and see messes. Snitchy and cracks, and see ornamental portion of the unencumbered freehold property of Michael Warden Esquire, intending to continue to reside abroad. Apostrophe apostrophe, intending to continue to reside abroad. Apostrophe apostrophe, repeated Clemency. Here it is, apostrophe, said Britain. Look. Apostrophe, and it was only this very day that I heard it whispered at the old house that better and plainer news had been half promised of her, soon. Apostrophe apostrophe, said Clemency, shaking her head sorrowfully, and patting her elbows, as if the recollection of old times unconsciously awakened her old habits. Dear, dear, dear. There'll be heavy hearts, Ben, yonder. Apostrophe, Mr. Britton heaved a sigh, and shook his head, and said he couldn't make it out. He had left off trying long ago. With that remark, he applied himself to putting up the bill just inside the bar window. Clemency, after meditating in silence for a few moments, roused herself, cleared her thoughtful brow, and bustled off to look after the children. Though the host of the nutmeg grater had a lively regard for his good wife, it was of the old patronizing kind, and she amused him mightily. Nothing would have astonished him so much as to have known for certain from any third party that it was she who managed the whole house, and made him, by her plain straightforward thrift, good humor, honesty, and industry, a thriving man. So easy it is, in any degree of life as the world very often finds it, to take those cheerful natures that never assert their merit at their own modest valuation, and to conceive a flippant liking of people for their outward oddities and eccentricities, whose innate worth, if we would look so far, might make us blush in the comparison. It was comfortable to Mr. Britton to think of his own condescension in having married Clemency. She was a perpetual testimony to him of the goodness of his heart, and the kindness of his disposition, and he felt that her being an excellent wife was an illustration of the old precept, that virtue is its own reward. He had finished wafering up the bill, and had locked the vouchers for her day's proceedings in the cupboard, chuckling all the time over her capacity for business when, returning with the news that the two Master Britons were playing in the coach house under the superintendence of one Betsy, and that little Clem was sleeping like a picture, apostrophe, she sat down to tea, which had awaited her arrival, on a little table. It was a very neat little bar, with the usual display of bottles and glasses, a sedate clock, right to the minute it was 5:30, everything in its place, and everything furbished and polished up to the very utmost. It's the first time I've sat down quietly today, I declare, apostrophe, said Mrs. Britton, taking a long breath, as if she had sat down for the night, but getting up again immediately, to hand her husband his tea, and cut him his bread and butter. How that bill does set me thinking of old times. Apostrophe apostrophe, ah. Apostrophe apostrophe, said Mr. Britton, handling his saucer like an oyster, and disposing of its contents on the same principle. That same Mr. Michael Warden, apostrophe, said Clemency, shaking her head at the notice of sale, lost me my old place. Apostrophe, and got you your husband, apostrophe, said Mr. Britton. Well, so he did, apostrophe, retorted Clemency, and many thanks to him. Apostrophe, man's the creature of habit, apostrophe, said Mr. Britton, surveying her, over his saucer. I had somehow got used to you, Clem. and I found I shouldn't be able to get on without you. So we went and got made man and wife. Ha! Ha! We! Who'd have thought it? Apostrophe, who indeed? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Clemency. It was very good of you, Ben. Apostrophe, no, 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 apostrophe, replied Mr. Britton, with an air of self-denial. Nothing worth mentioning. Apostrophe, oh yes it was, Ben, apostrophe, said his wife, with great simplicity. I'm sure I think so, and am very much obliged to you. Ah! Apostrophe, looking again at the bill, when she was known to be gone, and out of reach, dear girl, I couldn't help telling for her sake quite as much as there's what I knew, could I? Apostrophe, apostrophe, you told it, anyhow, apostrophe, observed her husband. And Dr. Jeddler, apostrophe, pursued Clemency, putting down her teacup, and looking thoughtfully at the bill, in his grief and passion turned me out of house and home. I never have been so glad of anything in all my life, as that I didn't say an angry word to him, and hadn't any angry feeling towards him, even then, for he repented that truly, afterwards. How often he has sat in this room, and told me over and over again he was sorry for it, the last time, only yesterday, when you were out. How often he has sat in this room, and talked to me, hour after hour, about one thing and another, in which he made, believe to be interested, but only for the sake of the days, that are gone by, and because he knows she used to like me, Ben. Apostrophe, apostrophe, why, how did you ever come to catch a glimpse of that, Clem? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked her husband. Astonished that she should have a distinct perception of a truth which had only dimly suggested itself to his inquiring mind. I don't know, I'm sure, apostrophe, said Clemency, blowing her tea, to cool it. Bless you, I couldn't tell you, if he was to offer me a reward of £100. Apostrophe, he might have pursued this metaphysical subject, but for her catching a glimpse of a substantial fact behind him, in the shape of a gentleman attired in mourning, and cloaked and booted like a rider on horseback, who stood at the bar door. He seemed attentive to their conversation, and not at all impatient to interrupt it. Clemency hastily rose at this sight. Mr. Britton also rose, and saluted the guest. Will you please to walk upstairs, sir? There's a very nice room upstairs, sir. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.